Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Insight into Healing. I am Alexa Servadidio. I am your host. I am a licensed clinical social worker. I have been working in the field for about 8 years now. I have my own private practice, and I also work at a large mental health clinic. I work with children, adolescents, and adults. I do individual therapy, couples therapy, and family therapy. Tonight on the show, I've decided to do something a little bit different. Each show, I usually have a guest on with me to go over questions from the listeners and provide feedback. But tonight, I've put together two cases based on questions that were sent in from listeners, and I really wanted to go more in depth about how I would treat it if this client had come into my office. So I picked two questions, and I'm going to try this differently tonight. I'm going to be on the show by myself answering these questions and going over these two cases. So let's get started. My first question was, dear Insight into Healing, I have been married for 4 years and have 2 children. I recently caught my husband texting an ex-girlfriend. I am distraught. Is my marriage over? Will I ever be able to look at him again the same way? What did I do wrong? I'm in such shock. Definitely, I've worked with a lot of couples where there has been actual infidelity, and also with the texting, that has caused a lot of conflict, obviously, within the marriage. And I think sometimes it could be so traumatic or so blindsided by what happened that it can become very overwhelming. To answer this question, is my marriage over? I think that's really up to each partner. Is this something that you can work through? I think sometimes until you go through it yourself, as I see with couples, It's a different scenario. I mean, I think if it's never happened to you, and you can say, of course, I would leave him, it would be right over, this is a deal breaker. But I think sometimes a lot of the couples that I've worked with that have had this happen, before it happened, that was definitely, if this ever happened, I would definitely leave. There's no second guesses, no going back. But then when it actually did happen, it really shook them to their core and really made them think, do they really want to end their marriage? So what I usually do is work with the couple, really trying to identify what was going on in the marriage before the infidelity or the texting or the outreach to the third party, and really trying to see if there was any type of things going on or warning signs or something that communication was not well in the marriage. And I think sometimes you'll find that, not that it's an excuse to ever cheat on your spouse or on your significant other, but sometimes there's things that build up and there's some red flags that could happen. And I know it's hard to, we all have busy lives and people are working and children, so sometimes it's hard to really sit back and explore these things as they happen on a day-to-day basis. But I think it's very important to really look through. I will be using the short-term couples therapy, second edition. It's the Imago Model in Action by Wade Luguette. He does a lot of intense couples therapy, and what I found is it really is important, even if there is not infidelity in the marriage, but when you feel that there's something going on with the communication, even if there's not even a difficulty going on, you just want to improve the way you communicate, the way you two interact with each other, it's very, very interesting. What he has is something called the couple's dialogue. I'll be reading this right from the book. The following communication tool is the basis for healing in Imago relationship therapy. If you and your partner learn and practice this one skill regularly, you will stop the re-injuring process and begin to open the way for conscious healing. This I find very important, and I really stress the word where he says, you will stop the re-injuring process. Now, I find that most couples have kind of this dance, as you would say, that they go back and forth. And that is a cycle of how they communicate, how they get through things. One might be a pursuer, one might be a distancer, and they kind of go back and forth with the roles. And sometimes I find a lot of that they're trying to reenact something out from their child, or something they did not get, or something they witnessed as a child with their parents' marriage. And they bring it somehow consciously, subconsciously, into their future relationship to kind of work this out. Because as a child, when you're growing up in a family, if there's chaos, abuse, trauma, addiction, it's very hard for the child to not personalize it, even though it might not have, usually has nothing to do with the child. Obviously, it's not the child's fault. But children, no matter what age, and I know a lot of people say, oh, they're too young, they don't understand what's going on. I have sat, in the room with 4 or 5-year-olds, and they can tell you exactly what's going on. But the one thing is they skew it into where they're having responsibility for what the parents are going through. So I find that's what's really important, to have a healthy couples dialogue, because you're really modeling for your children how they're going to communicate at work, with friends, with romantic partners. And it's very, very helpful that they can see how you communicated and be able to take that and apply that to their own relationships. The number one thing here is mirroring. Mirroring, I heard you say, or if I'm hearing you correctly, you said. Then after that is, did I get it? Is there more? You repeat this process in 2 or 3 rounds of mirroring, and then you validate. I know at first this sounds, what is this? How would this help? But it's very amazing if you really think about if you're listening or if you're really hearing. And there's a difference. And I think a lot of us have our own, as I said before, own inner monologue in our heads that can be from childhood. It can be positive. It can be negative. And it's so repetitive and it's just so routine that a lot of times this monologue just comes up and it takes over and we're not even conscious of what's going on. And what I find is that this can skew how you're actually listening and hearing. I think when your partner is talking to you, being able, which it's hard, and I understand it takes time, but to be able to kind of put aside your emotional feelings as you're listening, as you're hearing, to actually hear the content and try not to have it arise an emotional feeling out of you. And I know it's very hard to listen like that, and I find that a lot of times as a therapist, this is something we are trained to do. And it takes time, but I think that it's very different from as if you're sitting down at lunch with your friend and you're listening to how their day was. You're listening with a different intent. And I think being able to really know what your intent is when you're listening to your partner, your loved one. And I think especially if there is any type of conflict, it's really focusing on the goal of is not who's right or wrong or winning each battle, but being really able to acknowledge and listen and hear what's bothering your partner, and then being able to support them, show empathy, and move forward. This doesn't mean you compromise how you feel or you give up how you're feeling and that you have to agree with what they're saying. But I think by acknowledging it, I think that's where a lot of problems I find in couples work is the couple, they feel that if they acknowledge it, they almost lost, or that means they're enabling the behavior or they're encouraging the behavior, which is not true. I think by acknowledging it, everyone needs their feelings to be acknowledged. And I think feelings, a lot of the time you're dealing with emotions, can be irrational. So there might not be an exact reason where you can say, okay, this is exactly why this person feels this way. And I think trying not to figure out why this person feels this way, but just saying for what it is, this is how this person feels, sometimes takes the personal blame out of it. So you're kind of like a third party listening, that mediator, listening, even though this is the relationship you're involved in, to really find out what is this person saying. I think by saying what they were saying, you repeat what they're saying. So then you can say exactly, okay, this is what I hear you saying. I heard you say you don't like it when I raise my voice for example, when I speak to you, or if I'm hearing you correctly, it's really upsetting when I raise my voice. And I think that also really puts it on the table what the issue is. So the other person feels safe to say, yes, when you do raise your voice, it does. That's exactly what I'm trying to say. And there's really no miscommunication or a different, you know, view on what's going on. I think once you both agree that this is what raising your voice, that's something that's very upsetting. Then when you say, did I get that? Is there more? So I think that allows the person a platform to expose what's going on with their feelings, to also communicate to their partner, you know, this is really upsetting, and not having to feel defensive. And I think that's where a lot of couples sometimes find a lot of problems, is that they become very defensive. And I understand, because it's a very sensitive topic that's going on, and you're very vulnerable. So it's hard to, you know, allow yourself to be that vulnerable without a defense. So sometimes, you know, with the anger or raising your voice, you're kind of trying to use some self-protection. But I think if you really look at the couple and you look at your partner, if you can both agree that you both have the same intent, is to love each other, to have the marriage work, and to be healthy, and you both have the best intentions of good for the other partner, and you can trust that, I think that's really an important foundation for you to be able to move forward and say, okay, let's, next time there is something comes up. And I think day-to-day things, it's life. Things come up in the couple, in life, that you're not going to always agree on, or that feelings get hurt. But if you can kind of set that foundation down, that you know the other person isn't doing it on purpose, or the other person just doesn't want to hurt you, this is just something that happens, I think it's a very great foundation for that. And I know sometimes people are saying, well, what happens if the other partner is doing it to hurt you? That becomes another topic. I think that's really exploring, what does that serve in the relationship for this person? Why? What are they doing to do with to wanting to hurt you? And I think that also, you start to look at, is this something that happens all the time? Is this something that they do out of control, manipulation? Is this how they get what they want? And I think then being able to really, really explore that with the other partner, if they're willing to do that. Sometimes people, you know, want the control or the manipulation out of fear, out of anxiety, out of anger, or out of something they saw in their own childhood, and that's how they saw their parents communicate and the family dynamics, that it almost becomes second nature for them, that this is how what a healthy marriage looks like. I think it's very important to really be able to check out each person's home life. What was their childhood like? How did they grow up? What was it like in their household? And I think I had a parent-child dialogue also from the same book, The Imago Therapy, that I did a couple of shows back. And what it was, ask your partner the following question and listen with empathy. I am your mother, your father, or your significant caretaker. What was it like to live with me? Why I think this is a really important question is it really gives you insight into what it was like for that person growing up as a child. What was their role models like? What was the role modeling, role playing of relationships in their household? What was, you know, what was the family dynamics of that, and how did each family member partake in the family dynamics? I know sometimes people say, what does that have to do with anything? That's something that happened in their childhood. You know, they can, you know, obviously they didn't work in their own childhood, in their own family. Why would they bring it to another relationship? And I think it's out of what I said before. You reenact sometimes what happened in your past relationships, in your childhood, to come out with a better understanding or to get closure. And most of the time when you're reenacting something, that type of closure is really not going to happen, because you don't even know exactly, I find with a lot of my work, what would actually be that closure. And I think your idealization of what that closure would look like and what actually feels like it filled that void are two different things. So I find a lot of times I have people searching and searching for this idealized closure, and it's very painful because you never know if you're going to get to that. And, you know, I think until you really sit with what you're struggling with And again, starting with the awareness, are you able to start working towards closure? And I think with closure, as I said with the five stages of grief, that too, is, for each person in each case, is totally different. I don't think there's a time limit on it. Some people can get closure within the first 6 months of therapy. Some people have been in therapy for 8 years and really haven't gotten the complete closure that they feel they need, but they've definitely seen the personal growth, definitely been healing, and I think it takes time to heal. And that's why I find with my show, what it was so important with me for starting this radio show, is really being able to provide the community with these educational tools and this insight into healing and personal growth, and it's a process. And I know sometimes people want to get over it really quickly, they want to work on it fast, and they feel like, what's wrong with me? Why can't I move past this? And then they really start blaming themselves. I think that when you're going into something like this, there's no quick fix. Quick fixes never last. And if you're going in just to fix something, I feel that that's not the right reason. I think going in to acknowledge, going in to learn, going in for growth is really something more to focus on. Also by trying to have the other person realize that they were wrong or say that they were sorry. Sorry, yes, I understand, but to totally come and see your side of your viewpoint and discredit what they're thinking is a very hard challenge for the other person, and I basically think for anybody. And again, I think it's really, you know, it takes work. Really, it's not about who's right and wrong and who wins the battle, but really growing together and saving the marriage. Now, then the second question in this parent-child dialogue is then ask, I am your mother, father, significant caretaker. What did you need from me that you did not get? Now, that's very, very powerful. And I think sometimes I find when I do this work with couples, it's very upsetting. I mean, I've had a lot of couples at this point really just break down in tears and really be able to sit with that there was something in their childhood that they did not get or something traumatic that happened that they were never really allowed to talk about, or they felt, you know, why bring it up? It was so many years ago. But I think that's why it's so important to be able to give that platform for the other person. I think it's also built such respect in the relationship, in the marriage, that you're allowing your partner a safe environment to be vulnerable, to have his or her defenses down and really explore if there was trauma, if there was neglect, conflict, and being able to explore that in a healthy manner. And I find in therapy, as a couples therapist, having myself there is sometimes a safety for the couple. It's a time where I can say, okay, you know, these are the goals, these are the boundaries, these are the rules. As I usually say, no name calling, trying not to raise your voice, even though it does get heated and people raise their voice, and I understand that. But again, no threatening, no showing intimidation to the other client, the other person, no fear, no trying to manipulate, to dominate, but to be able to really just explore what's going on. And sometimes I can see, you know, when there's anger, it's very frightening. But I find when the anger is being able to express in a safe way where there's a third person to kind of reel the person back in and calm them down, it starts showing the couple that there's self-regulation. And then hopefully what my goal is that I can teach the couple to move forward and to be able to self-regulate, which is really such a powerful, powerful thing. And it takes time, believe me, but I think being able to be in a relationship with your significant other and to talk about things that you both agree on, that you agree that you disagree, but to be able to hear and acknowledge the other person's feelings, respect them, but don't have to agree with them, but respect them and allow them to have their own opinion and for you to have your own opinion, but and to say, you know what, I know we both have different opinions, but how can we put them together and make them our own, but making them our own as a couple. Now, that's very important. What I find with that is making it your own as a couple, as each person comes into the marriage, the relationship, with their own things, with their own viewpoints, with their own personal monologue in their head. And we can't rip away all those years, even if it's unhealthy monologue or unhealthy defense mechanisms, coping skills, we can't just rip those apart and leave the person with nothing. At some point in their life, these defense mechanisms, these monologues, served a purpose. So I think it's being able to acknowledge that each person's personal monologue, each person's coping mechanisms, defense mechanisms, acknowledge them, seeing what they were used for, how they served the person, the relationship, their life, and then agreeing that right now it's not healthy anymore to use those same things because you've grown emotionally, physically, mentally. So your coping skills, your defense mechanisms have to grow into healthier ways of communicating. And I find when two adults in a marriage learn that on their own and then learn it together and are able to support each other, show empathy, that is being able to allow the other person and give them support and strength in a healthy way, it's very empowering for the couple. Because then I find the other person doesn't turn into the enemy. The person is, even though you can fight with that person and not agree with them, they become a partner in growth. And I think that's why it's very important when someone is going into couples therapy. And I think also this woman that wrote in about this question about her husband who was texting his ex-girlfriend. I think really being able to be very honest, and I know it's hard and it might be very hard for the husband to admit what's going on, but I think being very honest and not having any secrets and being able to say, this is what it is, this is what happened, can we move forward from this? If the answer is, I don't know, okay, then you don't have to have a definite answer, can we move forward from this? But if the answer is definitely not, this is a deal breaker, and so one partner does not want to work on the marriage, that's a different story. But if both partners, you know, maybe are ambivalent or not sure that this is something that could be healed, could be worked through, but I think just having the agreement that they're not ready yet to throw in the towel of the marriage, but they're willing enough to work with each other and move forward and see where this growth is, I think that's what's the important thing. And this listener wrote in, how can I ever look at him again the same? And I understand that. I mean, I've had a lot of couples where there has been infidelity, and it's hard to look at your significant other after that. I think what I found is there's just such a violation, such a betrayal, that the other person feels so shaken to their core that this is someone that they love, they trusted. And sometimes when they're so blindsided by this, it's shocking. And it does cause anxiety, and, you know, so I believe, too, PTSD. I think it's such a traumatic event where you start becoming very hypervigilant. You want to know where this person is 24 hours a day. You want to make sure their phone is, you can check their phone, and you want to make sure this never happens again. And I understand that. That can be a normal response. You want to make sure if this is something you're going to work on, the only way you'll feel better is if you know their every move. But what I tell a lot of couples when this happens, that's not a way to spend the rest of your life. I think always having to keep tabs on him or her, seeing what they're, you know, checking their phones, checking their phone bills, that's a very hard way to live. It's a very tough way, and it's not healthy. And I know the idea of, you know, they say, well, how will I ever know? What happens if he's doing this behind my back for so long, and he still keeps on doing it, and then I don't know about it? I think sooner or later something will come out, and if it doesn't, it's kind of working through that. But I feel if you don't have some sort of basic agreement or some basic trust of moving forward and this behavior is going to, you know, be worked on, that it's hard to actually start healing the marriage. And I'm not saying that right away you're going to be like, okay, you can go out with your friends, you can do this, I'm not going to worry, I trust you. No, it takes time. You know, and again, there's not a certain time limit. I can't say after 6 months you'll totally feel something different. I don't think that, you know, each case is so differently. But I think it's time, and it's being able to really kind of take a personal inventory of yourself and say, okay, what can I work on? What is in my control? We cannot control other people's behaviors, no matter how we keep them in the house and we have their phone. We control what they do, what they eat, who they see. That's still not going to bring you the closure or to the place where you want to be. I think being able to find that healthy spot in yourself and say, you know what, if my significant other is going to do this again, that is his action. He does this because it's him. And I find, you know, one of the questions is this, what did I do wrong? This listener wrote in. I don't think it's about what did you do wrong. I think a lot of times when the infidelity has happened or the reaching out to a third party, you usually have to do something with the person that's actually acting on it. And I know that's a hard thing to take because people are like, maybe if I cooked better, maybe if I lost weight, maybe if I dressed nicer. Yes, those things can add to a marriage. Those things could enhance, you know, the sex life, the attraction. But I think if this person is, there's something for them to reach out to the other person, there's something going on with them. Is it poor self-esteem? Is it getting a certain attention, you know, that they need? And it doesn't mean that maybe you're not giving that attention, but I think it's something to do with them. And I think then it really opens up the dialogue for each partner is what in their mind, when they were a child, what do they visualize marriage would be like? What would they visualize what their spouse would? How would they be spending their life? What would their life look after 5 years of marriage, 10 years of marriage, 20 years of marriage? And I think really exploring that and then really checking the reality of what's going on. Because I find a lot of couples, you know, what you see on television and everybody's happy and, you know, the sex life is wild and everything's going really, really well, and the communication is really well, I think that is an idealization. And I think really finding the realistic day-to-day, you know, it's stressful. It's hard. People are tired from work. People are tired from the children. And I think really exploring the reality and what actually is the ideal and what is the in-between. What as a couple, this is what I said before, making the couple's own, making it something for them. What would they want? What could both of them see as a healthy way that they would like their marriage to be? I think that's where, you know, doing the parent-child dialogue. At the end it says, first, one partner talks to one parent, and at another time, talks to the other parent. The receiving partner is an empathetic listener. Do not ask questions other than those above. Questions pull people out of their feelings and into their thoughts. Now, I like that. That's very important. Questions will pull people out of their feelings and into their thoughts. We want people to stick with their feelings. We don't want them to kind of overthink and analyze, but really stick with their feelings. And I think that also makes that person, it's their own. This is how you're feeling. This is how I'm feeling. I'm feeling like this. I'm feeling like that. And I think really being able to identify what these feelings are. And I think it's important to express to your significant other, you know, this is the feeling, and what does that feeling mean, and how is it represented, and I think really defining it for your partner, because each person has a different way of what their thoughts are, of what these feelings are, and I think it's, you know, someone's feeling of rejection or someone's feeling of sadness is totally different from what another person views it. And I think that's very important too when, you know, in the beginning of a relationship, during a relationship, getting engaged, planning on marriage, kind of trying to figure out what each person's personal view or definition of feelings are. Now in this book there's a feelings list. And these are really kind of straightforward things that you can say. Some of them are abandoned, adequate, adamant, affectionate, agony, almighty, ambivalent, angry, annoyed, anxious, apathetic, astounded, awed, calm, exasperated, excited, jealous, isolated, intimidated, quarrelsome, rage, refreshed, rejected, relaxed, relieved, remorse, restless, rewarded, righteous, scared, screwed up, settled, wonderful, weepy, uneasy, unsettled, terrible, tenuous, tentative, terrified, threatened, trapped, troubled, sympathetic, suffering, stupid, sorry, skeptical. I think it's really important to be able to take a personal inventory of these feelings and when you're feeling them. I think also even outside of the couple, as I say, I always really, really enjoy journaling. I find it's very, always, you know, for my clients, they please, you know, do a journal. And I think this is a great way to start your day off. You know, have your journal, have your feelings list, and say, today, this morning, I woke up, despair. Today, this morning, joyous. And then maybe at lunchtime, at lunch, it's 12:45, I'm pleased. And then maybe at night, 6 o'clock, I feel tempted, I feel talkative. And I think also checking to see if there's a pattern of certain feelings that you're always feeling. That are, like, maybe there's a theme that's going on. And I think that really gives you a better idea of how you're feeling and how your day is, and also getting to see your partners. And I think having the partner be able to write down what their journal is, what their feelings list is, and for you two to be able to present it to one, to each other. And again, I think it's very important when you're doing journaling or you're presenting anything of a personal nature, there has to be ground rules. No criticism, no judgment, being open, trying not to persuade them that they're wrong and this is what it really means, or saying, that's crazy, you can't feel that way, that doesn't make sense. I think being able to kind of control yourself, not to judge, not to comment, not to give criticism, but to hear it for what it is. Because I think once people are able to express how they're feeling and explore it, then you can kind of get a better idea as a couple working together. What does this mean? I mean, what is it? How can the other person empathize with you? How can the other person help soothe or work with you to help you self-soothe yourself? And I think that's a very important tool for a couple to use. I also find a lot with couples when they do some journals that sometimes they might be feeling the same thing, but they use a totally different word. And I think that's what really comes from what did they learn in the home? What are different things that they've learned to express in their, how do they express their anger? Were they allowed to express anger in their house? Were they allowed to express sadness in their house or anxiety? Because I've had a lot of couples where the male was not allowed or wasn't looked upon to express sadness, to express defeat, to express any type of weakness. So as growing older and moving forward, we're able to say, hey, I'm really feeling hurt by you. I'm feeling, you know, really weak. I feel that, you know, I'm very vulnerable. So using the anger to protect themselves is really masking how they're feeling, scared, depressed, anxious, but they use the anger as a defense mechanism. In this book, Imago, there's another one on session 5, Restructuring Frustration. Number 1, write a frustrating event. What you do that frustrates me is, and then there's a box, what actually happened. Number 2, write the feeling response. And then I feel, and you put in the box, emotions and feelings. Number 3, write behavioral response. And what I do is what you actually do. Number 4, write your hidden fear, to hide my fear. Fear your response, hide. I think that's really, again, what I was just talking about, really being able to find out what the fear is. And number 5, hidden desires. My desires from you are. Then it goes, to obtain my desires, I would like to request from you. Number 1, a behavior change request. As I use an example, raising your voice. My desire would be, is I would request that when I feel sad and I question something, you don't raise your voice. Behavior change request number 2. When you're angry, please, if you could not raise your voice, but to be able to tell me what's upsetting you. Behavior change request number 3. How do you react to anxiety? How do you react to sadness? Sometimes when your partner, I found from the female part of the relationship, that the wife, just by expressing sadness or expressing anxiety or disappointment, really elicits this anger, this fear, this uncomfortable feeling of not good enough in the male. So the man wants to fix it. He wants to figure, well, no, you can't be sad because of this, and then we can just do this. And I think it turns into more of, how can I fix this? How can we get a quick, you know, fix to this and a solution? I think that's, you know, especially in couples therapy, there isn't a quick fix. I think there's not a right answer, there's not a wrong answer, but it's really being able to sit with the feelings. And I find it's very hard, and I understand. I've had a lot of people really work with it, and it's a tough thing to be able to sit with the pain and not have an answer and not have a solution. And I think that's what really is taking the time. And once you can build the tolerance and the awareness to sit with the pain, I have found with a lot of my clients that the work moving forward is a lot easier, or at first it's not as tough later on as it was at first. There's another exercise here, the container process. Before you use this exercise, you should make 3 protective agreements. No hitting or name calling, no physical or verbal attacks, no property damage, and no leaving until all 7 steps are completed. What I like about this, and I think any time in therapy or when there's 2 people really working on something, having ground rules, having boundaries is very important because it kind of gives you an area to work in. And I think when the other person knows that there's going to be no intimidation, there's going to be no verbal attacks, no violence, safety always first, but it also gives you a platform to be able to express how you're feeling in a safer environment. And then the last one, no leaving until all 7 steps are completed. That I find, the importance of that is that you're making a commitment that no matter what you hear, how upsetting you feel, or how much you disagree, you're not going to give up on the other person. And I find with a lot of my couples, I'm going to leave, there's going to be a divorce, I'm going to take the children. And I think when those type of ultimatums, threats come, it makes the other person put up their defense. So, of course, they're not going to show you vulnerability because you just threatened to leave. You threatened to abandon them. You threatened to take their children. So, of course, the defense mechanism is going to be triggered, and then that person is not going to be able to really explore in an open, vulnerable way. So make sure when we're going through this or anytime you're having these meetings or these sessions, that you really want to make sure there's a safe groundwork, and it has to be where there's a both commitment. If the other person feels like they can't agree to safety or they can't agree to the rules, I think then that's something else. I mean, where is the commitment for the marriage or the commitment of moving forward? I think there has to be boundaries, there has to be guidelines. Now, partner A is the sender and partner B is the receiver. 1, ask for an appointment. The receiver, agree to a time, ASAP. Partner A, identify the trigger to your frustration. State the frustration in 1 sentence. I don't like when you come home from work late. The receiver, paraphrase your partner's frustration. Put on your psychic armor. What I mean that is, even though I think this, what they're saying is, even though putting on your psychic armor is saying, even though you don't agree or it might be hurtful what the other person is saying, for you to be able to repeat it back to your partner is a very freeing way. So it almost, even though you don't agree with it, by you saying it, you're acknowledging it. That means, if the other partner is saying something that's verbally abusive or demeaning, I think, again, you go back to the rules. It shouldn't be you saying something that's really something that's not, demeaning or putting yourself down, but really being able to also, in this way, you want to be truthful and honest as the sender of saying how you're feeling. But again, you don't want this to be a verbal attack. You don't want to be a competition. You want to say, this is how I'm feeling. Let me say what's going on. 3, the sender, explode feelings. What this is, I feel upset when you come home late. I feel sad. I feel neglected. I feel cheated. I feel unnoticed. I feel invisible. And then the receiver, listen with empathy. Empathy means really being I think there's a difference between empathy and sympathy. You're not feeling sorry for that person. You don't have to feel regret, but listening with empathy, being able to listen and say, okay, I could see where that would be upsetting. I might not agree with it, but I could see where this person might take it the wrong way. Or I'm going to give you the benefit of the doubt to hear what you have to say and to at least acknowledge that these feelings are what you're feeling. I think that is, again, validation. I find a lot of times in relationships, in marriages where there's conflict, really what the other person is seeking is validation. It's just the other person saying, you know what, I can see how that would be upsetting for you. And something just as that simple is what is needed. And I know some people are like, is that all? That's what it was? But it's a very hard thing to be able to kind of put aside for a moment your personal injury, your vulnerability, and to listen to the other person and actually acknowledge and validate. And I find sometimes for people that's hard because then they have to kind of take responsibility for their behavior. Or it makes them really get a close awareness on what am I doing? What is my role in this? And I think that's where this isn't about assigning blame or punishing. This is about each person being aware of what is my role in the conflict? What is my role in the infidelity? What is my role? Again, it's not, you know, it's someone cheats, if that person decided to act on it, so we cannot be responsible on other people's, how their actions are. But what is the role? What has been going on? Because, you know, there's always, you know, there's two people in this marriage. So I think definitely each person has to really kind of see what the role is, what is going on, and being able to look at it without, you know, placing blame and judging. Number four, implosion. Anger turns to sadness and tears. And the receiver provides physical holding, care, and empathy. This is a very powerful moment, being able to turn the anger to sadness into tears. And as I said before, a lot of people use anger as their defense, and it's also, it's a lot more, I guess, in some way, in some people's mind, healthier and stronger to be angry than to be sad, to cry in front of the other person. Sometimes people see that as a defeat. Even if it's you know, the woman cheating on the man or the man cheating on the woman, I think it's, again, finding out how each person's role is defined in their house. Were men allowed to cry? Were women allowed to get angry? So I think allowing someone to feel all these feelings and go through the cycle of these feelings, and for you to say, I'm here, I'm supporting you, I'm not going anywhere, and I'm not judging you, I'm going to let you do this. Again, you can't fix them, you can't take their feelings away, you can't make them feel better. Again, we have to do that ourselves. They have to fill that void from themselves. But I think if you can provide physical holding, care, and empathy, those are very powerful, nurturing, healthy tools to teach somebody else, to provide, especially someone you love, a family member, a husband, a wife. It's very powerful. And I think that's why this is so important, as having this as a foundation and as kind of a common theme through your relationship. Because what I find is that when you have this sort of strength and bond, usually things that come up that can usually destroy the marriage or really, you know, disintegrate the relationship, when you have this type of bond, it really strengthens and it really says, you know what, this is a really horrible thing that happened. And I'm angry and I'm upset, but our marriage and our respect for each other and our life together is strong. We can work through this, and myself as a person and you as a person, I know you have a commitment toward to me and I have a commitment to you. We have a commitment to this marriage that we can work through this. And I think being able to find that common ground, and it takes time. And I found a lot of times in couples work, this isn't something that happened and we agreed on the first day of therapy. Sometimes this finding that vulnerability and finding to be able to say, I commit to this, you know, this is not that you allow the other person to be abusive to you or having to put up with anything like that, but I'm saying being able to kind of work through this and give someone that feeling that you're going to be there and not abandon them is very powerful. And sometimes it takes 6 months, sometimes we can do it in a couple of weeks, but I think also getting underneath the anger is really important because it really opens up to the feelings. And it also starts healing the person so they're able to move forward. They're able to say, okay, now that I'm sad, anger, sadness, as again, it's like in the five stages of grief. They go in different orders. But it's allowing the person to kind of go through and process and experience all the different stages of how they're feeling with this. Six, ask for three behavior changes related to the trigger. This is from the sender. So if the trigger is, I get angry every time you come home late from work, it's upsetting me, it's sad. Ask for three behavior changes related to the trigger. This could be, call me if you know you're going to be late. send me an email, send me a text message. Maybe have certain nights during the week that you've agreed on, hey, you know, if you can with work, because I understand, you know, work is hard and sometimes you can't do your schedule. Can we maybe say, if you do have to stay, maybe Tuesdays and Fridays will be your late nights. I think, and then the third one, saying behavior change, being able to really say, you know, I know, I'm sorry, maybe I'm working late again, but, you know, I'll try to make it up. And maybe over the weekend, you two can really schedule some great time together, some special couple time. And I think also with this person that wrote in, that they have two children. What I find a lot, too, in these marriages where there's problems, where there's infidelity, sometimes there's so much going on with the children that the parents don't have any adult time. And they say, how can I? I don't have, you know, it costs money to get a babysitter. Everyone's tired of people are working late. The schedule, soccer practice, this. It's hard to, you know, we're exhausted. You'd rather go to sleep. But I think that's where the work comes in. You have to make time for the two adults to have adult time. Even if it's going for a cup of coffee. Even if it's going for a walk and having someone watch the kids or an older kid watch the younger kid. So you two can have adult conversations and interact on an adult level. Because I think fine also when there's young children around and there's things going on, you are reacting and talking to children all day, or you're reacting with just all the adults all day if you're working all the time. So I think the different ways of communication get skewed. I think also being able to acknowledge what the other person does for a living, for the day, what they do. If the person, if one stays home and one works, I think both are equal. And I think both have to be acknowledged. And I think, you know, really being able to, and I know it sounds tedious and it sounds like a lot of time of talking things through that should already be known, but I find that's where a lot of the problems come. Well, they say, well, she knows how much I respect her. She's a great mother. She knows that. And then the wife will say, but you never really say it. But you know you're a good mother. Why would I leave you with my children all the time? But I think by you saying it each day and making it a point, maybe that's the behavior change. Every day, wake up and say, I'm so grateful that I can go to work and feel comfortable because you're the mother of my child and you do such a great job and I trust you. I think that's really, you know, it's building strength. It's building the bond and strengthening it. And I think it's really important. I know sometimes these little things, people are so busy that they overlook them or they just don't have time. But I think as the years go by, even in healthy marriages where there hasn't been an infidelity or any type of serious conflict, it's something that it becomes like a job. And I hate to have to say that, but you have to schedule it. You have to go out of your way and make an appointment to say, you know what, I'm going to make sure I really compliment my wife or husband today. Or I'm really going to acknowledge one thing they did each day that really, really surprised me or really I appreciated. I think that's where, again, like in past shows, things that you are grateful for. I think it's really kind of really focuses more on the positive than on what's the negative. So then when someone does have a disagreement or someone, you know, feels upset with that, the other person doesn't feel like, oh, God, you're always picking on me. I can never do anything right. Because the only time this person maybe talks to you or brings something up is when you're wrong instead of just when you do something good. So I think that's what puts in the habit by complimenting, is that when something does come that maybe you don't agree with, they already know that you approve of them. And I say, well, we've been married for 20 years. How could they know I don't love them? It happens. I mean, don't ever underestimate the power of a compliment, the power of love and kindness and being grateful and showing appreciation to other people. It's a very, very powerful thing. And it can really, I've seen it work such wonders in marriages. So I'd really make sure, you know, take also a personal inventory with that about what does, you know, your spouse, and I know sometimes it's hard to hear, what would your spouse like to hear from you? And maybe even asking them, you know, what do you feel? Do you feel that I compliment you enough? How do you feel? And it's not about starting an argument. It's not about just like, oh, God, no, I don't want to dig up this. It's going to start a huge war. No, and I think being able to say, this is not about, again, who's right or wrong, what's going on. It's about how can we improve the marriage, how can we improve our communication as a couple, and how can we move forward? And having that as the goal, as the common good of the intention of the marriage, then the other person is more open to hearing what the other person has to say because you trust them, and you've already really discussed it, that both of your intentions are for the good of the marriage, the good of the children, the good of the other person. So that defense, that anger, that cutting off, that anxiety is put to the side in some degree, so you're more open to hear what that person has to say. Number six, this is from the receiver. Mirror the request. Commit to at least one change or offer an alternative. This, I really like that. Commit to at least one change or offer an alternative. See, that again is also you hearing what the other person says, acknowledging it, and then making it your own. I find that's very, very important so no one feels that they are forced to do something or it doesn't feel like that's the way they would do it or it doesn't feel comfortable. By acknowledging and saying, how can I do this? I don't like, say the trigger was, I don't like it when you come home late from work, it gets me angry, it gets me sad. What's one thing that you could commit to or offer an alternative? And really exploring and being open and saying, you know, maybe calling, you don't know when you're going to be late for work. So saying, you know, I'll call you anytime I know, but you might not know until 10 minutes before. I understand that. I think the other person being able to say, okay, depending on the job, this is something that's, you know, nature of the beast. But to be able to say, let me find an alternative. How about if I am late and it's last minute, that Saturday or that Sunday, I owe you a cup of coffee, or let's go out for a nice dessert, or let's go to our favorite restaurant and really spend time. So then the person doesn't feel like, okay, now he's late, he didn't call me, he's not showing up, I'm kind of sitting here waiting, what is going on? You can say, okay, he must be late, and then you have something positive. Instead of looking at the anger, you have something positive. Great, Saturday, you know, I'll make reservations at 6 o'clock for our favorite restaurant. I think taking the negative and turning it into a positive, and then really exploring, because some jobs, yes, you won't have control over what time you come home or what's going on, but I think keeping that open communication, that open respect with each other is really, really key in moving forward and having a healthy marriage. Number seven, initiate high-energy play. This also I think with the high-energy play is, you know, building up the excitement, building up the bond as a couple. And if it's physical play, kind of reconnecting. Because I find a lot of times with couples, when there's conflict, when there's infidelity, really looking at the intimacy level. And I know a lot of the wives, the last thing I want to do is that when I find him, I can imagine this listener, when she caught her husband texting his ex-girlfriend, if you want to be intimate with your significant other. And I think being able to sit with them, and it doesn't mean this happens right after, but I think it's about saying, okay, what can we do? Because I think we're nurturing the emotional, we're nurturing the mental growth, personal growth. We've got to nurture and promote and awareness and heal the physical intimacy, the physical growth, the touching, the holding hands. It doesn't always have to be sexual. I think that's where it comes in. I think sometimes when couples put too much pressure on what the sex should look like or how many times you should have it, it takes out the intimacy. It takes out the safeness. It takes out the innocence of it. And I think that's what's really, you know, this high energy play. And for the receiver is, participate actively in the high energy play. I think at first they might maybe feel uncomfortable or feel a little bit awkward, but I think it's getting over those feelings and those fears and building together and both saying, okay, this is a little work and it's a little uncomfortable. And I know I've had a lot of couples say, it shouldn't be like that. Sex should just happen, that intimacy should just be there. That's not always the case. You know, and I find, especially through the years, and if you've been with someone for a long time, you cannot not work on the intimacy. It's you have to grow. You have to work on it. It's something that has to be addressed every day. So I think working on the physical intimacy, maybe saying, you know what, trying to hold hands more, trying to hug more. And I know at first it might seem a little forced, but I think it's finding that connection, the emotional, the mental, and then putting it in physical action. It's a representation. It's kind of saying, this is my commitment. I'm showing you physical commitment that I'm able to do this, that I'm willing to do this. So I find that's really, really important to make sure, especially when we're going, if there's been conflict or infidelity, that it's really making sure we build the physical, that we always concentrate on that too, because that's an important part. I don't think sex defines a marriage, but I think when something is not right in the intimacy department, the sexual department, that they could be a real hindrance to the marriage. It could be a real block in moving forward. And I think being really honest, you know, in the couples therapy, and I know at first it's very uncomfortable to talk about your sex life and what's going on with that. But I think being able to kind of get over that after a while, work through it, and really be honest with each other. What the other one wants, what the other one needs, what does that mean? Again, we talked about what does fear mean, what does anger mean, what does holding hand mean, what does saying no, what does someone saying they're tired mean? I mean, I think really what we say and what the other person feels about it usually are two different things. I think we're not mind readers, and you can't expect the other person to say, no, of course she knows I'm attracted to her, or he knows I'm attracted, I'm just tired, I've been working all day, I've been with the children all day. I think being able to say, you know what, I'm tired, I know, please don't take this personally. I've been working all day, you know, I'm going to really work on maybe tomorrow, you know, maybe taking a nap or maybe spending extra time to get ready before you come home to make a little bit of change, a little bit, that, again, making it your own. So you're showing to your partner, okay, I want to work on this. But it, again, it does not happen overnight. This is something that's going to take time, and it's something where both of you can really explore together. And I think that's where it really builds the basis of a healthy marriage. The exercises I used today, again, came from the book Short-Term Couples Therapy, second edition, The Imago Model in Action by Wade Legault. It's really great. You can definitely order it or look it up online. Again, as I like to do at the end of each show, is to assign a journaling exercise. In my next show, I will definitely be talking about how to start a journal, if it's your first time, and I know for a lot of people, it's hard first to acknowledge these personal feelings, these emotions. It's hard to identify. Again, journaling is not about being right, being wrong, being on point. Is this correct? Should I be feeling this? It's not about judging. It's about putting it down on paper and being able to go back and forth and look at it and not judge it and say, okay, this is where I was. Journaling. At the end of each day, write down 5 things you did well and 5 things you would like to improve on. And I think, again, being open, being honest, but not being judgmental. I think also in couples therapy, this might actually be great to share with the other person, especially if you two are working on the same goals. I think it's definitely something that, you know, could help improve your communication and understanding of where the other person is coming from. Well, this is the end of the show, and I hope everyone really enjoyed the show tonight. I know the format was a little bit different than usual, but I would like to, just definitely wanted to try something new. So if anyone has any feedback, comments, or questions, or if there's another case study or something that you would like me, the listeners, to explore in depth, you can always send me an email at insightintohealing@gmail.com. All names will remain anonymous. You can also go to my Facebook page, Insight into Healing. Please like the page, and you can also private message me there with any questions, concerns, or anything like that. But again, guys, I would like to thank you so much for listening tonight. And please, this is our song as we were coming into the show. I would like to put it out on the way out. It's Every Good Thing by The Afters. Everybody, good night, and God bless.